Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Scott Ritter, and Scott is going to talk about U.S.-Russian politics. So, Scott, let's start off the conversation with the Russian dissident. What's your take on it?
Well, you're speaking of Alexei Navalny, who
right.
has, over the course of the past two decades, been involved in work critical of the government of Vladimir Putin. You know, when Navalny's a lawyer, he's a very smart man. He's educated. He's a lawyer. And when he first started, his work two decades ago, he was focused on exposing corruption, and he became a thorn in the side of, many corrupt politicians who got called out or exposed by his work. And his success there raised his profile such that he caught the attention of the U.S. Embassy, and he helped co-found a political party, which, is a political opposition party that received funding from the United States government, in particular the National Endowment for Democracy. And if anybody knows anything about the National Endowment of Democracy for Democracy, it basically was born in the 1980s when the CIA, who used to do political interference in other countries covertly, decided that it would be better to turn this in, to take their work and create an overt arm, meaning that rather than do this underhandedly, that we would create a foundation that would donate money and accomplish the same thing overtly that the CIA had done covertly. So basically, the National Endowment for Democracy is an overt arm of U.S. foreign policy that used to be carried out by the CIA. And Navalny's group received money to help start them up, which right off the bat tells you something, that Navalny's group, I mean, when you accept, if I were to start a political party here in the United States, that's great. It's a democracy. That's what we're supposed to do. But if I received money from the Russian government, from an organ of the Russian government that was opposed to the United States and trying to undermine my government, you wouldn't think very much of my political party, would you? You'd be suspicious of its origins and its goals and objectives. And that's the issue with Navalny. Navalny has never been a genuine Russian patriot. I mean, I can't read into his heart. I don't know what his motives are. But you don't take money from the United States government, from a part of the United States government whose sole function is to undermine the government of Vladimir Putin. I'm not saying that undermining the government of Vladimir Putin, isn't a desirable thing. Maybe there's some people who think that that's what we should be doing. That's fine as long as it's a U.S. government doing. But when you're a Russian citizen and you receive that money, you become tainted. And that is Navalny. That's how he started his political work, receiving money from the U.S. government to undermine his own government. And then in 2010, he was vetted by the U.S. Embassy and selected for this Yale, this program where you go to Yale. The Yale program ostensibly picks the top 10 up and coming international superstars in the world of politics and brings them to Yale for a 9-month program of mentorship education. They reach out and they develop contacts and things like that. It's really a front for the CIA's National Resources Division to recruit these people for follow-on action. it just is what it is. It's what we do. That's fine. That you're American, love it. That's how we protect ourselves. But as a Russian, to have Navalny selected for this program, brought to Yale, and spend 9 months being mentored by the National Resources Division of the CIA to become a long-term asset of the United States government, that's not a good thing if you're a Russian. And yet Navalny went back and he began his active work. This is a man whose sole function is to work on behalf of the United States of America to undermine Russia. If you're an American, love him. Love him. That's fine. If you're a Russian, he's a traitor. And that's the reality. Moreover, because of the way they receive money, et cetera, a lot of their money is received covertly. It's laundered. It's not just from the United States. It's from Great Britain. We have the Russians have released surveillance tapes that show Navalny's people meeting with British diplomats who talk about laundering money through various non-governmental organizations. And then that money would be used for political purposes, which is not permitted through the non-governmental organization. What this means is that Navalny's people and Navalny himself received money from certain entities and then used that money improperly from a standpoint of Russian law. That's called embezzlement. Now, I'm not saying that Navalny enriched himself. What I'm saying is the law is very strict. If you receive money that says you can only use it A, B, C, but then you seek to launder that money and you use it for EFG, you've violated the law, you've committed embezzlement, and Navalny got caught. He's in jail right now today in Russia because he committed embezzlement, because he was convicted of embezzlement by the Russian authorities. And, you know, in the United States and in Europe and elsewhere, we say, oh, he's a political prisoner, you're persecuting this poor man. Again, I'm not saying that Navalny took this money and put it in his pocket. I'm saying Navalny received money that was supposed to be used one way and then used it another way at the direction of the intelligence services of the United States and Great Britain. He's lucky he hasn't been put up against the wall and shot because he's a traitor. If you're a Russian, he's a traitor. If you're the West, he's a political agent that we use to undermine Russia. He's never had more than 5% support in Russia. We call him an opposition leader. He doesn't lead an opposition. He leads, you know, a handful of discontent people who are very vocal, who receive a lot of money to get their, you know, anti-Putin message put out there. But at the end of the day, when you go across the width and breadth of Russia, he doesn't have a viable constituency. He cannot win an election. He cannot influence the government. This is the reality of Alexei Navalny. He's a CIA stooge in jail for violating Russian law, and yet we put him up as the poster child of legitimate political opposition to Vladimir Putin.
So when did he go to Yale? What year?
2010.
Okay. Now, during the Trump years, from 17 to 2021, we didn't hear too much about him. What was his status at that point?
During the Trump years, he was already arrested and convicted of embezzlement. He didn't go to jail. He was given a probation sentence, so he was basically, you know, he would go out and lead street. You know, street protests, and then he made a career out of getting arrested and putting on little shows in front of the court, in court. He was basically involved in troublemaking, political troublemaking inside Russia. But he's really the brainchild of Michael McFaul, the former U.S. ambassador to Russia. Michael McFaul was, before he became ambassador of the United States to Russia in, I believe, 2012, he was the head of section of the National Security Council. He was Barack Obama's number one Russian policy guy. And if you know anything about McFaul, he's not a diplomat. He's an academic. Moreover, he's an activist academic who started his work in Moscow at the end of the Cold War when the Soviet Union fell. He was one of these guys who helped bring Boris Yeltsin into prominence. In 1996, he was one of the Americans that helped buy an election in Russia. A lot of Americans don't realize this, that we bought an election in Russia in 1996. We went into Russia, we poured millions of dollars, and we stole an election for Boris Yeltsin, who was basically America's man. I mean, we can sit here and whine and all this about allegations of Russian manipulation of an American presidential election. We bought a president in Russia in 1996. Michael McFaul was part of that process. Most Americans aren't aware of that. This is why Vladimir Putin is very angry at the United States, because he knows the truth. He knows what we did, and he knows who Michael McFaul is. McFaul is a man who came into, I guess, political maturity when it comes to Russia, background of buying Russian elections, of manipulating the Russian political processes, and he believes that's what the United States should be doing. And Navalny is his tool. That's why you see, if you read Michael McFaul's Twitter, he's all over the place about Navalny, backing Navalny, saying that we should do everything short of going to war with Russia because of how Navalny's treated. And the reason is, it was McFaul that vetted Navalny to send him to Yale. McFaul is very much tied to Alexei Navalny's work in Russia on behalf of the United States.
Have you encountered any media in which all the stuff you're talking about has been exposed?
Well, you can pick, and I mean, the thing is, the truth is out there. I mean, the facts are out there. Everything I've just told you is in print. It's like hidden in paragraph 14. It's like hidden in paragraph 23 on page 6. Not too many people have taken the pieces and then connected the dots and put them together. So when they talk about Navalny going to Yale, they'll mention that, but nobody's asked the question, well, how did he get selected? What is the process of selecting that? Who had to sponsor him? And now when you start getting into those questions, Michael McFaul's name shows up, and nobody wants to talk about that because McFaul pretends that he had nothing to do with Navalny. McFaul had everything to do with Navalny. So the data is out there. Bringing the data together and doing a focused assessment of the data, I've done that, and a couple other people have done that, but not in the mainstream media. The mainstream media is busy treating Michael McFaul as the darling of anti-Putinism, and Alexei Navalny is a legitimate opposition figure.
What about the poisoning? Tell us a little bit about the poisoning.
Well, I mean, the allegations are that a top secret unit of the Russian intelligence services tracked Navalny, broke into his hotel room, got a pair of his underwear, and then applied a dose of this Novichok, the world's most deadly poison. I mean, that's what we're told. It's a chemical agent, a nerve agent. It's the most deadly substance known to man. And they applied a diluted portion of this onto Navalny's underwear so that when he put it on, it would be absorbed and he would die. That's the allegation. And then he was on an airplane. He went into conniption fits, and they landed in the city of Omsk. The doctors treated him. People intervened from Germany. They flew a plane out. Putin said, what the hell, let him fly out of the country, I don't care. And they flew him out of the country. The Germans took blood and screamed, oh, we have proof that you used Novichok. And this became a huge political scandal. Meanwhile, Navalny miraculously recovers, disappears to the Black Forest, where he works with a German production company that's working with a CIA front out of Los Angeles to produce a propaganda film about Putin's palace. That film could not have been produced if Navalny was in Russia, where he was on probation, by the way, not allowed to leave Russia, but Putin allowed him to fly out of Russia to get medical treatment. The fact of the matter is, there was no chemical attack. You don't – I mean, it's the dumbest thing in the world to speak of. The Russians are very good at killing people if they want them killed. Nemtsov, the former opposition leader, who apparently irritated people, was murdered in broad daylight outside of the Kremlin. The way they murdered him is they knew all the camera angles, and they waited until a street cleaner passed in front, blocking the only camera angle where Nemtsov was. A car came up, two Chechens pulled out, shot him with a bullet and drove off. That's how you die in Russia. They knock on your hotel room, you open it up, and they pop you three times in the face with a bullet. They don't go through this stupidity of tracking a guy, poisoning him on an airplane using the world's most deadly substance, which hasn't killed anybody, by the way. This is the same substance the Russians were supposed to have used to try and assassinate a former defector who was returned to England with his daughter. The Skripals, they were claimed to have been affected by, this Novichok. But again, if for the world's most deadly substance, it's not killing very many people. And it's just stupid. It's ludicrous. This is pure propaganda put out by the CIA, by MI6, as an effort to undermine the, the legitimacy of Vladimir Putin. If they wanted Navalny dead, he'd be dead. They wouldn't go through this rigmarole. And if they were trying to poison him with the world's most deadly substance known to man, why would you allow him then to go to Germany for medical treatment? And if the Germans have proof through the blood samples of Navalny that the Novichok was used, why aren't the Germans releasing this as they are required to? They won't. So it's just a made-up story. It's total fabrication.
And the people on the mainstream media know this, right?
Well, when you say know this, most of the people who are talking on mainstream media don't know anything about Russia. And the others that do have a political axe to grind. If you take a look at who's on TV today talking, you got characters like Stephen Hall, former CIA Moscow station chief, and you go, whoa, that's a station chief in Moscow. He certainly has to know a lot. But when you take a look, when he arrived, he was compromised. Six of his American officers were arrested and kicked out of country because they are incompetent. They got caught by the KGB. He got kicked out of the country because he's incompetent. And yet now we're supposed to trust this man to come on TV and tell us everything about Russia as if he knows anything about Russia. He's a failed spy. Almost everybody you see who's out there talking is a failed spy. They don't have, we don't have the likes of George Kennan anymore, a diplomat who was successful in negotiations and knew the Russians, understood the Russians. We don't have Stephen Cohen anymore. He died, unfortunately, his great insights. We have the Michael McFalls. We have the John Halls. We have the John Cyphers, failed CIA assets. We have Malcolm Nance, who is a fraud, doesn't know anything about Russia, and yet he's out there talking about, stolen elections as if, he had been tracking the Russian threat his entire career. He didn't. So that's the problem with mainstream media, is that they've staffed themselves with these charlatans, these frauds, these fakes.
Wow. So within the last week or so, there was talk again about the Russian interference in our election. Can you share your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I mean, it's interesting what they call Russian interference in our election. There is evidence that entities linked to Russia, not necessarily the Russian government, but linked to Russia, the so-called troll farms, spent anywhere from a few hundred thousand to a little over $2 million buying ads in various social media, Facebook, et cetera, and that these ads were targeting elements in the United States, blacks, disenfranchised whites, et cetera, to try and shape their mindset so that they would oppose Hillary Clinton, support Donald Trump, things of that nature. And people could say, aha, look, they interfered in America's election. Let me give you an example of why this is just dumber than dirt. Michael Bloomberg ran for the Democratic nomination. He assembled the most sophisticated team of social media manipulators the world has ever seen involved in a political campaign in the United States, and he spent $500 million, $500 million, putting together the most sophisticated ads on TV, on radio, on social media, the whole works, and he got two delegates and had to drop out of the race. So here's a man who spent $500 million with the most sophisticated people ever, and he couldn't change America's – he couldn't manipulate the vote. So the idea that somehow a bunch of Russian trolls who know nothing about America, who put in together very crude ads, were interfering with the U.S. election, it's ludicrous. It's embarrassing. If I'm an American and I hear this, I'm embarrassed. It's humiliating for my government to say this, because what they're saying is, I'm so stupid that I will fall for a misspelled poor grammar advertisement that appears on my Facebook page and suddenly go, well, that just changed my entire mind on everything, as if I don't have an opinion formed on my own life's experience about what I support and what I don't support. This is an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. No manipulation took place. Americans can't be manipulated by stupid Facebook ads. This is a joke. And every American who hears this should be enraged that they are being so belittled and insulted by their own government, who's saying that you obviously can't think on your own, you obviously can't form your own opinion, you're susceptible to outside interference, but we remain silent about, you know, the money that comes in from Israel, for instance, the role played by the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, who actually buys members of Congress to support Israel. We're silent on that, but no, the Russians spent between $500,000 and $1.2 million buying stupid Facebook ads, and they interfered in American presidential elections. It's an insult. This is just purely part of the overall game being played to demonize Russia, demonize Vladimir Putin, and empower Congress and others to impose sanctions. That's all it's about.
Wow. So we have just a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you'd like to enlighten people about U.S.-Russian relations right now?
Well, the one thing I would point out to people is that our policy is failing egregiously. Let's just take a look. We had Joe Biden come on TV and talk to George Stephanopoulos, and the end result of that is they basically called Vladimir Putin a soulless, and the media ran with, oh, isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? He's calling Putin what he is. You know, no, statesmen don't act like that. Meanwhile, we're encouraging Ukraine to, you know, create trouble with Russia and the Donbass and threaten to recapture Crimea militarily. And Russia mobilizes, 120,000 troops. Putin gets on TV and says, if you mess with me, I'll destroy Ukraine. I draw the red lines. I decide what they are. Don't send your ships into the Black Sea. I'll sink them. And next thing you know, Biden has to turn the ships around. And now Biden's on the phone begging Putin for a summit meeting. Who's in charge?
Wow.
So, you know, anybody who thinks that what Biden is doing is somehow making America stronger and Russia weaker doesn't understand the dynamic that has just transpired. Putin is in charge. And he's running the show, not because he has such a great plan, but it's because we don't have a plan that's fact-based, because we rely on these Putin whisperers, these charlatans on TV to misinform us about what the truth is. This is a sad state of affairs, because it's not just about, you know, making relations worse. It's about making relations worse with a nation that possesses enough thermonuclear weapons to make the United States disappear, you know, 10 times over, just like we can make them disappear. Is that really the world we want to live in, where we threaten each other with nuclear annihilation? So, you know, it's tough times right now. It's going to be interesting to see how Joe Biden can recover from this.
So do you think Trump had better relations with Russia as far as the well-being of the United States than Biden does?
The problem with Trump is that Trump was one man by himself. He never engaged his team. You know, Trump, I believe, had the right ideas. But then he had Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, who said the dumbest things on the face of the earth. He had John Bolton as his National Security Advisor, who said stupid things. And he had a U.S. Congress that was just insane in terms of passing more and more sanctions. So on the one hand, Trump said, you know, I want to be friends with Russia. On the other hand, he kept sanctioning Russia as much or even more so than Biden did. So I think both of them. I just think the United States in totality doesn't know how to deal with Russia, because to deal with Russia successfully, we used to do that back when I was, you know, involved, when there was the Soviet Union. And you know why we dealt with them successfully? Because we respected them. We treated them as equals. That doesn't mean that we were best friends. That doesn't mean that we rolled over and did whatever they want. No, we were standing strong. But when we sat across the table from a Russian, we treated them with respect. We treated them with equals. We took them seriously. We don't treat the Russians with respect, and we need to start doing so, because they deserve respect, not because they're the most wonderful nation on the face of the earth, but just based upon what I just told you, they're smarter than we are. They have better diplomats than we are, and they have a plan, and they're implementing that plan, whereas we don't have a plan. We don't know what we're doing. So hopefully, if we can sit down at the table, treat them with respect, treat them as equals, maybe we can get some things done.
So, Scott, we're just about out of time. To everybody that's listening, how could they learn more about you? You do a lot of writing.
Yeah, I publish my stuff. I put everything I write on from different venues on Twitter, so at Real Scott Ritter. And I also do an awful lot of commentary for RT America. And so if you just go and Google my name, Scott Ritter, and put RT, you'll get a whole list of the articles that I publish there.
Scott, I always enjoy talking with you, and I'm sure we will talk again. And I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Scott. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a great day. Bye.